Taylor Enterprise, Queen City Angels, was founded 22 years ago by Tony Shipley. And so now, Tony, it's your turn to stand up so that people can see who was it that started Queen City Angels. So on five different measurements, the marketplace has gone from what I've described, not much of anything, to what some publications have written up and considered to be one of the top five robust entrepreneurial ecosystems in the United States. And interestingly, I guess we ought to throw this in, Anthony. HCDC, or Alloy as it's now called, just did a name change, you know, long involved, deep, complicated process, and HCDC became Alloy. And I like it because it starts with A, and that's better. But there's a ranking of global incubators, and Alloy was ranked in the top five in the world. So there are points of distinction that are factually based, reflected by the numbers that were just articulated, which I shall not run through or summarize again because of your agreement to memorize all of what was said. And thank you for doing so. Zeitgeist, and Anthony, you're going to be on this panel, and so are you, Tony. So, you know, maybe we can distract people by you guys starting to walk up, and we'll begin the process of beginning.
Yes, if you're on the Zeitgeist panel, let's take the stage.
Yeah, no, come on. But, yeah.
Stephen Burke?
There's no assigned seating. The spirit of the times, Zeitgeist. So, look, here's a thumbnail description of the Cincinnati region that leads us to the robust entrepreneurial ecosystem that was just characterized through those facts and figures. Cincinnati started its life on Earth in 1788. That's 1788, you know, I know some of you are math challenged, several centuries ago. And by 1860, the area became distinguished because of the Civil War. As most of you know, but I think you know, you New Yorkers have discovered, there's a culture that manifests itself here that's different from most places. And one of the reasons, one of the explanations for the cultural characteristics that you've observed is we are where North meets South and South meets North. The Underground Railroad was busy and active right here in Cincinnati as the Ohio River divided America's North and America's South, the Mason-Dixon line. And the blending, I mean, there's historical significance to the role of the Underground Railroad, of course, and that's dramatized and continues to be part of our local thinking. But the interesting blend is if you take Midwestern modesty and hook it in with Southern civility or courtesy, you get a different kind of person. There are none of those in Cleveland. There are none of those in New York. They're only here because of those two cultures coming together and giving rise to a certain type of person that lives in and works in Cincinnati, Ohio. By the 1880s, Cincinnati was the largest city in the United States west of the Allegheny. It was on its way to becoming a major commercial center. The city leaders decided to spurn the railroads, this being a steamboat river city, commerce-wise, spurned the railroads, sent them to Chicago, and decided here that an artsy, craftsy culture would be preferable. And Washington Park, as many of you know, is right behind us, more attractive than who went to NYU? More attractive than your Washington Park is this one. And on Washington Park is Music Hall, which was built in 1876. But the arts culture and that unique dimension that I just attempted to describe has been part of the zeitgeist in this market. Time went by. The area grew. Procter and it's the let's see this city. One of the reasons that there was not much of an entrepreneurial ecosystem 30 years ago is we live with a corporate overhang. Procter and Gamble, Kroger, GE Aircraft. There are major enterprises here that affect the way we think about work and our city. And that corporate overhang, when the first venture fund was raised, caused various leaders to ask the question, are there any companies in which to invest? And by the way, what is venture capital? Well, we're well past that in today's world, given the difference between 30 years ago and today. The city is led today by a mayor whose life story, of course, can be read by anybody online, and maybe he would tell you too. This mayor, Aftab Perval, worked for the Department of Justice, worked for the Procter & Gamble Company, and entered public office in 2015-16. And became mayor, was elected mayor this past fall, took office in January of this year, half year ago. And while you can learn more about him, he's about to turn 40 years old, what I'd like, and what Pagan, my wife Peg and I would like to share with you today is not any more about his past, but about his future. We believe that in 2029, Aftab, child of a Tibetan and Indian set of parents, will be elected president of the United States, and therefore, for your planning purposes, at least those who care, the inaugural will be in January of 2030. So this will be a 15-year run, 2015 to 2030. Jack Kennedy was elected president at 43. Barack Obama at what, 48 or so? And Aftab is 40 now. But you have just learned the most important element of our future, and thank you for sharing this momentous experience.
Perfect. I was afraid we were going to do every decade, but no, you set the stage well. Now, I want to we have a tradition. Whenever Stephen Burke is with us, we give him the stage to talk about the big picture, and then we're going to talk about Cincinnati. So we're going to show some slides, and then I'm going to turn the projector off because it's in your faces. But this, if you allow us to show us these slides, and Stephen is a pro. He does this 113 weeks in a row.
So Mark, does that mean we're going to go from the big global picture, and then the person who speaks after him will be pause? The mayor of Cincinnati?
Well, he elected to go clean up. And so we're going to talk about the venture elements of Cincinnati and then his bigger picture, which I guess includes a run for president, but I don't know. Stephen Burke, to you.
Thanks, Mark. And thanks, Jack. I think with the speakers we have left today, we each have about 45 seconds. So thank you. So we want to talk about...
Is that because you took notes because it was so interesting?
Fascinating. I didn't know who was going to win any of the elections going forward, so if you can fill in the other blanks, it would be great.
You know, most of your predictions have been essentially wrong.
Well, I know. That's the whole purpose of predictions. So shifting gears, Jack and I can have this conversation later. Want to talk about what's going on in the world and capturing the kind of spirit of the times. Back in 1952, the UN created a group called the Conference for Disarmament. And it was 65 nations trying to figure out how we're going to deal with weapons of mass destruction going forward. And they rotate the leadership every couple of years, alphabetically, by country, alphabetically in English. So you never know who's, you know who's going to get it next. So the new change happened, and the people running it now, leading it now, is North Korea. So if you want to put a sense of how things are going in the world, North Korea, who's dropping, testing nukes left and right, is now leading the UN Council on Disarmament. So give you a sense of where the world's going and where we've been. To start the meeting, though, the guy from the North Korea started with, "My country is still at war with the United States," was his opening remarks as he took over the leadership of the program. So that's what's going on elsewhere in the world. We know there's really three things that I think are on most people's mind, and I use the analogy, rest in peace, RIP. It's Russia, inflation, and policy are the things that are really driving where we're going. And when you look at what's going on in the world and North Korea taking that role, it's kind of sets the stage quite well. But what's on people's minds right now, if you can go to the next slide, Nessim, is where are things now and how do we feel about things in the U.S.? And the Gallup survey came out, and you can see that we're close to record low levels of ratings in how satisfied people are with what's going on in the country. So we know that. You turn on the news, you hear it all the time, you see what's going on around the country. And we're fractured as a nation, but I think you could take it to the rest of the world. We are a fractured world with, you know, the democratic nations against the autocratic nations. We're going to live with that for some time. So we're in one of these stages that is really awkward from a geopolitical perspective. We're in an awkward position from a political perspective in the U.S. And then when you look around, the problems that we're facing are quite high. So if we go to the next slide, Anessa. So the most important issues facing the U.S., and it starts with poor leadership. And the role of government. So that's a big issue, but it's followed by inflation, obviously. But if you move down the list, one of the things that's really on people's minds right now is gun violence in the U.S. And the report out following the last couple of shootings is we're now up to 266 mass shootings in the U.S. year to date. Think about that number. That a mass shooting is characterized as over four people killed in the incident. So we're having a real issue with that going on. So I expect the next Gallup poll, that'll move up considerably. But really the top issues are the economy in general, the leadership and inflation that's weighs on people's minds. Go to the next slide. You can see how we feel about leadership. This is the approval rating for Congress, below 20. They've been pretty consistent in that. If you go to the next slide, we can look at ratings of the President Biden's approval ratings by party, and that's pretty straightforward, no surprises there. Overall, it is around 43%. Before the invasion of Ukraine, Putin was at 33. So we're not exactly sitting in a great spot, and Trump was actually around 38 to 41 during his time too. So we've had a consistent problem with that. Next slide. But inflation being the most important problem, and we're not set up well for the panel, but what you see is, back in the 80s, it was 52% on people's minds, but look at the spike up now. It's up to 18 and moving to 20. Turkey just announced their inflation rate today is 75%. Yeah, it's up from 73, so it's, you know, not moving up quite as quickly, but that is a big issue, and inflation is on people's minds. What I want to share with you is one of the numbers that came out today, which I don't think people are focused on the right way, is the labor force issues. And one of the key areas of the labor force issues driving inflation is wage inflation. And one of the key elements I think that's changing right now, not reflected in the numbers yet, is that companies are laying off people, are slowing down hiring left and right. You had the Tesla announcement today. You had Microsoft saying they're going to slow down hiring. Amazon's probably not going to fill in as people leave. So you're going through this period where wage inflation was because we had too few people chasing too many job openings. Now I think we're seeing the pendulum start to swing the other way, and you'll have less wage inflation in the U.S. And that's part of the reason when you look forward, the Fed's interest rates on inflation, the outlook for inflation in the 5-year or 10-year period are already turning down. So I think there's a lot of mixed signals going on, but this is going to weigh on people. But the biggest problem with inflation is it hurts the poorest people in the poorest countries, and it puts them in a box that they're going to have a tough time getting out of unless we can really get the war behind us and get the food production back out of the Ukraine and moving forward. So thank you for that, Mark, and we'll pass it on.
Thank you for that positive outlook, Stephen. Well, we do talk about what scares and excites us, so you sort of hit that theme. Who's next? I think, Brian, do you want to go from Centrifuge? Do you have slides? Okay, so we'll have those shown momentarily.
Thank you, sir, Mr. President. Time to clicker.
Great.
Awesome. First-timers to Union Hall, by chance? Fantastic. Well, welcome. Welcome. This place is very special to me, and I'm going to be brief today. So my name is Brian During. I'm the Director of Startup Services here at Centrifuge. But I've been here as a lot of different people. And I think to understand the power of what Centrifuge does, what Jack alluded to about this epicenter and this brick-and-mortar identity of startup, let me tell you a little bit about my story, because I think it'll kind of bring this all full circle about the value of this place that you're sitting in. So a lot of people know me as StreamSpot guy because I founded it with my wife, a live and on-demand streaming company. But the fact is, we didn't set out to do that. I started out my career as a news anchor at Channel 9 here in Cincinnati, except none of that's true. I was more like this guy. I was the director of news operations, so I bought all the stuff that made broadcast possible. And showing my age here, our big claim to fame is we were the first ones to go HD in the market. So it was like early 2000s. Big deal, you know? 4x3, 16x9. We were also streaming breaking news on the internet, but if you guys remember streaming in the early 2000s, it was like Real Player, Windows Media. We only worked on one device. And why I tell that story is I met this pretty lady who was actually on air. She was my girlfriend slash fiance at the time. And when we were meeting with our pastor to discuss the wedding, she was late because she was at a nursing home playing back, because he was at a nursing home playing back his sermon from a little handheld device he used to carry up to the pulpit. And I just said, hey, why not stream your services on the internet? He goes, I can't turn on the sound system. You want me to stream something? So we wrote a simple automation script, basically turned everything on, turned everything off. He didn't have to do anything except what he knew how to do, and that was preach. So that little idea just kind of stayed an idea. I went on to work at Cincinnati Bell, ended up running their consumer wireline, you know, one of those corporate cushy jobs. And it's 2010, you know, the market's in the toilet. What better time to like take that leap and do this church streaming idea? So from 2010 to 2013, we bootstrapped it. I like to say we ate a lot of spaghetti back then because we didn't know about Centrifuge. We didn't know about venture capital. We didn't know about any of these ecosystem things. So in 2014, we get into Ocean Accelerators, the first faith-based accelerator in the country. And shortly following that, we took a seed round from Cincy Tech and Kinetic Ventures. At the time, we were in 3 states, had 75 customers, and a year later, we were in all 50 states and 11 countries. So it really went like that. Took an A round in 2016, and then in 2020, we were acquired by a large church engagement platform called Subsplash out of Seattle. We were acquired in January of 2020. Does anybody know what happened in March? So the company was huge when we sold it. It's a little bigger now because every church on the planet needed live streaming, right? So I could have stayed there forever. You know, I was in the C-suite, nice cushy job, but I always tell the founders that I work with, don't sell the car if you still want to drive it. So, you know, what could I do to stay engaged with this ecosystem that's been so great to me? So that's why I landed back here at Centrifuge. So I joined in August, and I get to work with 106 of the coolest startups in town. And Jack, the one metric that you said, so while we have relationships with the 150, the actual number of active startups in the region is like 365. So it's crazy. And between great partners like Anthony over at HCDC, you know, we try to represent that entire circle together. So this place that you're sitting in is the brick and mortar identity, Union Hall, 38,000 square feet of top-notch co-working space where those startups can come and work from time to time. And what we do is between Startup Services, which is basically a suite of different kind of call it block and tackle things to get startups to the next level, curating their pitch decks, getting them ready to get in front of venture capitalists to kind of increase in this madness that we call startup. But with this space and tied to our syndicate fund, which is basically a fund of funds, it attracts capital from the largest enterprises here in town, Procter & Gamble, Western Star, just to name a few. And that relationship enables us to position these startups to those enterprises in a very appealing way. Because if you work with Procter & Gamble as a startup, traditionally, their supply agreements can be 60 pages long, right? And their payment terms, net 180. For the average startup, that's very difficult. Thanks to our relationship with Procter & Gamble, our startups have a 4-page supplier agreement, net 15 payment terms. So it's really knocking down kind of that upstream kind of hurdle that we have here. And just to kind of close here, you know, we have a bunch of events that we do here from time to time. Startup Cincy Week is our largest event here in October, so I encourage you to check that out. But, you know, the beauty of this place, I hope that you got it from my story, is it really does work. We are this kind of epicenter that if a founder has a dream, even if they didn't set out to found a company, with all these different ecosystem partners, it's 100% possible. And with great new founders coming through, like, did you guys meet Catherine from Netty? So fantastic. I mean, it's just going to keep getting better. So I had to fill in for Pete Blackshaw today. I'd never say that I could do that, you know, half the way that he did it. It's been an honor speaking to you, and thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. So I don't, Tony, were you going to set the stage further?
Thank you. Folks, pleasure to be with you today. As Jack indicated, I'm affiliated with two organizations that he mentioned. One is the Angel Capital Association, and the second one is Queen City Angels, based here in Cincinnati. If you look at what happened in 2020 and also what happened in 2008 and almost any other time in history when we have had a decline in the economy, we have relied on our entrepreneurs to help us recover. And as a matter of fact, I think the argument can be made today that entrepreneurs are really the rocket that drives our economy. Big corporations have in large part abandoned in-house innovation. And the way they get innovation these days is to buy companies that we, as angel investors and venture capitalists who follow on, invest in those companies, and they buy the technology, bolt it on, and make something much bigger. And if you take any 25-year period historically and look at the net new jobs that were created, all those net new jobs were created by companies that were 0 to 5 years old. So that means that we're driving the economy in multiple ways, we, the entrepreneurial community. For myself, I'm a recovering entrepreneur. I spent about 23 years setting up 3 businesses, all locally. And at the time that we did that, we had 0 infrastructure. There was an organization that came along that decided that we were worth a bet. And so Jack put together a syndication that ended up investing in our company. But that was a rare occasion in the mid-90s. And if you generally wanted capital, you had to go to the coast, the East Coast or the West Coast. If you wanted services, well, you just had to make it up because there weren't organizations that you could go to get support services. Today, that's all changed, and for the good or for the much better. And if you look broadly at what's going on at a higher level at the Angel Capital Association, our groups that Jack mentioned, and if you go at the top level, there are about 16 million accredited investors in this country. 300,000 of us are writing checks to invest in startups every year. But as Jack indicated, there is a professional group of angels that focus on doing what we do in a way that is congruent with the way venture capitalists expect companies to be set up to write that follow-on check. These 250 or 60 angel groups are investing about $600 million a year in 2,000 to 3,000 startups, and we're creating literally thousands of jobs through those startups. If you come down at the local level, as Jack indicated, our little 5-person group over the 22-year period has grown to 170 members. For the last N number of years, we've been investing roughly $5 to $6 million in the local startup scene. Local for us means Cincinnati as well as the state of Ohio. This past year, we've jumped up to about $10 million, and based on the last fund, the current fund that we're operating out of, it looks like we'll be investing at that space, at that pace for the next 2 or 3 year period at a minimum. And we're creating tons of jobs through those startups. So it's a healthy enterprise or environment ecosystem that we have today for our entrepreneurs. And I encourage all of us to continue to work together to build the ecosystem as we go forward.
But,
lots of progress.
But Tony, what scares you this vision that you have, you've been building? What could get in the way? What is getting in the way?
I mean, there's always things that happen in the entrepreneurial space. I think locally, to continue to think out of the box and not be parochial in terms of how we think about how we can expand the marketplace, and find ways to work together to build on each other's strengths. Candidly speaking, I feel at times in the past we haven't done that effectively and efficiently as a community. But I think there are some opportunities to bridge those differences and make sure that 1 + 1 + 1 equal 10 or 15 or 20. So I would say that's how we could improve as we go forward.
Tony.
All right, awesome. My name's Anthony Seppi, as Jack mentioned earlier, and super excited to be here and just talk about what we've got going on. I'm the director of the Alloy Growth Lab. That's our new name, formerly HCDC, and it's part of the triple threat. You know, we got the Growth Lab, which is the business incubator. That's what I run. We also have an economic development organization that is part of that, and then we have a lending organization as well. So a pretty robust organization to help entrepreneurs. And you know, we've been doing this for 30 plus years. Believe it or not, I have not been here for that 30 plus years. I'm going on my third year with Alloy Growth Lab, but we are just ecstatic to, you know, over the course of those 30 years, to welcome in other ecosystem partners to be part of that. So, you know, we couldn't do it on our own.
Anthony, what scares and excites you about Cincinnati?
What scares me? Just that I think the thing that potentially scares is that we get away from the collaborative mindset, you know, and there's an ego that just kind of, you know, upsets that cart. You know, I think we get things done as a group and you know, the collaboration, the cooperation amongst the group. So that's the one thing that really concerns me, is just, you know, maintaining that collaboration, you know, throughout Cincinnati and beyond. So yeah, that's, I appreciate that. And, you know, keep plugging away. You know, as Jack mentioned, we were recognized, you know, 2019, 2020, you know, global top 10 incubator. So that's something we're very proud of. And, you know, the graduates that are out here in the Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati community, you know, we're going to continue to churn those out into the region. So thank you.
Well, banning cleanup.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Jack. Thanks all of you for visiting our region and visiting our special city. My name is Aftab Purval. I am the mayor of Cincinnati. The prompt I was given is, what scares you and what excites you? I'll start with what scares me. We are all living through a generational paradigm shift. There are so many forces happening in the world right now that makes the future unclear. And what frankly scares the daylights out of me is, in my little corner of the world, I'm expected to lead and make strategic decisions right now that will not just have an impact over the next 4 or 8 years, but will really define the next generation for Cincinnati. And given the uncertainty right now in the entire world, cities that are flexible, that are nimble, that are innovative, that are bold and courageous are the ones I'm convinced that will thrive over the next 100 years. And getting that right now in this moment, when we have all of these federal dollars, placing those bets is really, really challenging and really, really terrifying, because none of us can predict what's going to happen. What I am somewhat persuaded by, however, is that because of climate change, because of the cost of living, because of the pandemic, the inward migration that had started happening will be catalyzed. Maybe not in the next 10, 15, 20, or 50 years, but people will start moving inwards into the country. And so how can Cincinnati be a destination for young, diverse families now and into the future, those kinds of climate migrants, those dollars, in order to attract the talent that we need to grow? That's a really scary proposition. What excites me, though, is what is so special about Cincinnati and what our strategy is. And what is, look, guys, maybe some of you are first-time visitors. Cincinnati is dope. I mean, on the national context, we are incredibly affordable. We are the world capital of sport, with the UC College Bearcats going to the college football playoff, with the Bengals being AFC champions. We're a finalist to host the World Cup. We're going to find out the news in the next couple of weeks. Just two nights ago, we held our closing argument with U.S. versus Morocco. We've got the best public high school in the state, some of the best parks and world-class arts in the entire country. Incredible corporate partners, as you've heard, GE Aviation, Procter & Gamble, and Kroger. But what makes us really special is our talent acquisition, because we have dense, diverse, walkable neighborhoods with good public transportation. I mean, if I dropped you in the center of our downtown area, you could walk to some of the best-ranked restaurants in the country. You could go watch the Bengals or the Reds. You could walk to a museum that was designed by Zaha Hadid. Whatever that you want, or whatever you dream, you can accomplish it here in Cincinnati. And that's the fundamental strength of our city. But what our strategy is moving forward is all around climate and sustainability, because one of the strengths that we have in the middle of the country is not just based on logistics, although we have incredible logistics companies and huge investments in our airport, but we're also very climate resilient. Of course, we're affected by climate change. Of course, we have rising temperatures, scarcity of water, clean air is a challenge. But compared to the rest of the country and the world, Cincinnati is incredibly climate resistant. That's why you have Intel partly making a massive investment just an hour north of here in a microchip factory. That kind of climate resilience will give us a step up as we move forward. So the DNA of our strategy is all around climate and resiliency. Our recent investments in high-tech manufacturing to take advantage of that Intel investment, our investments in climate and sustainability tech ecosystem that's housed right here at Union Hall, awesome collaboration with Centrifuge. Part of our bid to be a World Cup finalist city is that we are proposing through P&G and Kroger a zero waste World Cup city. Zero waste. That is part of the X factor that makes Cincinnati so special. We have the largest city-led solar farm in the entire country, and we have bold goals. By 2050, we will be carbon net neutral as a city. We're already well on our way to accomplishing those goals. So in so many ways, the investments we're making right now, the vision that we have, is that Cincinnati is the future. So frankly, if you are not applying to UC or investing your dollars here, you are crazy. Cincinnati is where it's at. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to allow some questions, and I think we're going to move everything back by 10 minutes, except for Jack's 10 sharp at the stadium. Let's get some questions going. Or comments on what scares and excites us about Cincinnati.
Anthony, can you talk a little bit more about the economic development resources at your organization?
So Alloy Growth Lab, we do have an economic development department. So they are responsible for economic development within Hamilton County. So they work with your townships, communities, municipalities that don't have their own, you know, economic development staff. So we will help them, you know, if there's, you know, business looking to expand or we're looking to retain businesses, you know, within Hamilton County, that team will, you know, they will talk about, you know, any type of, you know, programming, you know, tax incentive programs, workforce development programs. That's where they will come in and assist.
You know, are you getting communities. Everything out of the city of Cincinnati that you need?
Are we getting?
Since you have the mayor here.
Yes, absolutely. So we work hand in hand with the city.
But if you could fix one thing, what would it be?
Within the city or the county?
City, because the city's here.
Probably. Probably mobility, transportation. I would love to see more of that extend out, you know, throughout Hamilton County. That's, you know, if I had to pick one thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So.
Other questions? Yes.
This one's for you, Aftab. Ann Mooney, for those who don't know me. My question would be, you know, what do you see as the biggest obstacles to achieve the very well-articulated vision that you've laid forth for the city?
Look, American cities are still, despite the work that we've all collectively done, largely segregated with concentrations of poverty. And Cincinnati is no different. And in Cincinnati, if one out of every two of our citizens is ethnically diverse, who are by and large black, frankly, 40% of our city is black, then we cannot grow and be a global leader in the future if half of our city is dealing with systemic racism, disproportionate prejudices, and obstacles in the way of generating wealth. And so the challenges we have as a modern American city are, of course, violence, poverty, et cetera. But what I'm really fixated on is how can I generate more ownership, more black ownership of homes, neighborhoods, and businesses in order to reach some more parity in wealth in our community. And looking at the way where people live and work, and doing as much as I can through our zoning code and elsewhere to deconcentrate poverty and desegregate the city, I think that will, frankly, give us a leg up as we continue to compete in a global workplace.
This is for Tony. Tony, if I were an entrepreneur today, how could I get funding out of QCA, and how does it differ, or is it the same as Shark Tank?
First and foremost, bring an absolutely fantastic idea to the table that we can all get rich, including the entrepreneur. But having said that, most people that have been around this space have procedures that they follow, deal intake procedures. You contact our folks. You go into the top of the funnel. There's a screening process that we go through. Assuming they get through that screening process, then there's a due diligence process. After that, we make a make or buy decision. An investor, not invest decision with that company. But I think most entrepreneurs understand that process, whether it's coming to Centrifuge or any of the 22 other folks that Jack talked about. I think it's a fairly standard process that they come through. One thing that I should mention too, I talked about the amount of money that's being invested in the community. Another thing that our investor teams do for this community is just in our group along, we're investing about 20,000 hours a year just in supporting entrepreneurs, whether we invest in their company or not. So it's all those kinds of things that we do to help any type of entrepreneur rise up and be successful in what they're doing. Yes, and so when we first started this whole process of angel investing, we had to educate both the angels, because somebody asked you, what do you do? And I said, I'm an angel investor. It was like the third eyeball had popped up. They could only focus on your forehead. So we decided early on that we had to start an angel boot camp to educate people on the whole process. We still do that today as part of our organization. But at the national level, there's a whole angel university where people can attend to get any detailed, specific information that they need to make them into successful angel investors. On the flip side of that, when an entrepreneur gets their golden opportunity to get in front of investors, our goal is to help prepare them so that they hit it out of the park in making that presentation, so they can increase their win odds from 0.00 whatever to maybe at least a single digit number, and they have a much better chance of getting funding, notwithstanding the investor group that they're talking to.
Tony, would you mention the boot
Yes, in fact, for all of you entrepreneurs that are in attendance today, we have a boot camp coming up next week, next Tuesday and Wednesday. If you haven't signed up, please do so. You'll get 2 days of fantastic experience from many angel investors, service providers, and others who will teach you that whole process of how to set up a winning business plan and a business proposal.
Well, we could keep, I'm sure we could, if we're at Jack's house, we would keep this panel on forever, and we easily could, but we've got a lot of people we're going to hit, so I thank everybody for your time, and stick around if you can, particularly the breakouts, the Reds game, and we'll keep these conversations going. Thank you. Come join our 361 firm community of investors and thought leaders. We have a lot of events created by the community as we collaborate on investments and philanthropic interests. Join us.